You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 23rd of August, 2019. On the podcast today, I'm chatting to Glenn Goodman. Glenn is a former ITV news business correspondent and now basically a full-time crypto trader. And he's released the book, he's the author of the book, The Crypto Trader. So we talk about Bitcoin, regulation within that area, where the chart looks like it's going to go. I also mentioned Argo Blockchain Mining, a company I hold. Plus, also on the podcast, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn, the crypto trader Goodman. You all right, fella?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Considering you trade future currencies, you're a bit rubbish at tech, aren't you? We spent like 15 minutes getting your Skype working.
You were like, now go into settings and press audio. And I'm like, well, where's that?
Yeah, I can trade all the future cryptocurrencies in the world on any exchange, but I can't figure out Skype.
the one job I've never done is IT support. So that's my problem.
I want to ask you about mining, okay? Because I've got exposure to Bitcoin this week or last week in a certain way. It's not actually buying the Bitcoin itself, but I'll tell you that about that in a bit. First and foremost, you reckon there's been some regulatory news come out that's quite significant about blockchain and Bitcoin and all that?
Yes, indeed. There's been a massive regulatory approval. And this is actually an interesting thing because there's been a big improvement, basically, in the world of Bitcoin and its possible future. And yet that hasn't helped the price of Bitcoin this week. And I think that's an important thing that everybody always needs to keep in their mind. And I go on about it, in blogs and book and my book and everything, and where I talk about how news is not usually a good way to trade, whether you're trading stocks and shares or Bitcoin or anything else. Looking for interesting news announcements that everybody knows about and then trading off the back of those often kind of goes wrong. This is a perfect example. So BACT has won regulatory approval, and this is something that everyone in the Bitcoin world has been waiting for ages. It's basically the Intercontinental Exchange, one of the biggest exchanges in the exchange groups in the world. And based in New York, their subsidiary BACT has finally been given regulatory clearance to start providing physically delivered Bitcoin futures. And whilst that may sound complicated, and it's nothing that ordinary retail traders need to know about specifically, it is extremely important for banks and institutions, because hedge funds, everything from hedge funds upwards to the major banks, have been moaning for years and years that they don't feel safe investing in Bitcoin because every single way to do it felt a little bit too unregulated and a little bit too potentially dodgy for them, for their enormous amounts of investment. But now this BACT product, physically delivered properly stored Bitcoin futures with all the proper US regulation has been approved. It's going to launch next month, and that means that the big banks will be able to safely invest in Bitcoin without feeling worried about it. And as I say, that should have sent Bitcoin's price to the moon. But did it? No, it made no difference whatsoever. The price just carried on moving in the little trading range that it's been in for the past month or so.
It's odd, isn't it? It is odd, because like I said, since we had that massive spike, you know, a lot more has happened. You know, the access to it, the bigger companies, you know, starting their own sort of cryptocurrencies, sort of validating blockchain. Lots have happened positively. Yeah. But yet, it hasn't, maybe, I always say a spike, you know, it's a look into the future potential. So you have a comeback consolidation. But like I said, it ran about $10,000 at the moment, you know, it did get to 10,008 in the week. But yeah,
well, this is why I'm a technical trader primarily, Justin, and why I'm always skeptical about news and fundamentals in general, because, you know, what's happening to the Bitcoin price over the past month or so looks perfectly natural to me. If you look at it on a chart, on, say, a daily chart or a 4-hourly chart, you'll just see that, you know, the price has been doing since April, when it started rising. It's been doing what you'd expect. It jumps up, then it goes sideways for a month or so. Then it jumps up, then it goes sideways for a month or so. Then it jumps up, and now it's been going sideways for a month or so, regardless of all this good news that comes out.
I'm covering Bitcoin now in my weekly videos, because I've got sort of exposure, like I said, through a miner. But have you seen that wedge? It's a massive wedge that's created.
Yeah.
I'd say it started when, in June, top of the wedge was 12,900, 13,000. And it's literally, it's coming down in a tighter band format. It's up and down, okay, in a range, but that wedge is coming down. So flat bottom wedge, and this. So it will break up sooner or later, of course. I'm thinking to the upside. But if you look at the MACDs on a weekly chart, now not many Bitcoin traders will be looking at weekly charts, but the last time they converged at this in a downtrend was after that big sort of spike down after the big thing. So it's a bit worrying at the moment. We're on a bit of a downtrend.
I think it's worrying, even though, as you say, it looks like a kind of standard correction. It doesn't look like to me or you to be anything different from the corrections we've seen over the past few months. Just the shape of this wedge does have me worried, in the sense that this kind of, I mean, it's a hard one to describe on a podcast, but this particular kind of triangle shape, the way that it's pointing, has a kind of downward bias to it. So, you know, statistically speaking, it's probably more likely to have a strong break downwards than it is to have one upwards. But with those kind of triangles, it frankly can go either way. Maybe it's more likely to go down, but there's still a fair chance that it will break to the upside. So I'm kind of ready for either.
I reckon upside.
I could do either. I'm happy to, if it breaks down downwards strongly, I will actually go short if I can find a good entry point. If it goes upwards, then hooray, I'll be in for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it'll have a false breakdown and break up. I got upwards.
Because it does tend to do that.
Because I think now that the amount of liquidity in Bitcoin, it is conforming a little bit. It's not as erratic as it was back 2 years ago when it had that massive rise up. It's conforming a bit more. I likened it yesterday to like going from a kid to a bit of a teenager now. It slowed down a bit, you know, because I compared it to my two sons. One is 6, one is 9. One is slowing down a bit. He's, you know, sits on the settee more, likes to watch more TV. The other one still can't stay still, the 5-6-year-old. He's jumping around a bit. He's still active, you know. I'd say, Monty, sit down. And so I think Bitcoin is maturing a bit, and I think the liquidity is helping, and it's conforming a bit more like a stock. A very volatile stock, yes, but it's conforming a bit. And I think...
if these institutions start investing in the way that they may do in a month's time, now that they've finally got the product that they were looking for, then that could make it mature an enormous amount more. Because, as you say, it has slowed down a bit, but even so, even with that slowing down a bit, we've still had almost a 50% decline from the peak in late June. You know, this is the corrections that you get in Bitcoin during a bull market are like an entire bull market for like a normal stock or a normal kind of future. This is just like a minor correction. It's 50%. I mean, it's still quite crazy, but as you say, nowhere near as crazy as it used to be.
Okay, so I've taken a position, because I can't get everything I hold pretty much in stocks and shares in my ISA, stocks and shares ISA account. And I like it because there's a tax wrapper, of course, and don't get charged any tax, corporate capital gains tax. So I wanted to get exposure to Bitcoin, but I can't be bothered with cryptocurrency exchanges and all that stuff and spread betting. But I found the next best way, I think. And so I've invested in a company called, what are they called? Someone's calling me. Argo Mining, or Argo Blockchain.
Yeah.
And they want to be the most efficient, and I think that's almost the most important thing, largest listed miner on the planet. And I think the cost is very important, because like you say, it's very volatile, Bitcoin, and it's like normal mining. You know, when you're mining gold or anything like that, there's a certain level the gold price has to be at to make it profitable for the miner to carry on, continue. And you see all the, I mean, the bigger miners can put up with making a bit of loss for a while, because hopefully they got a bit of cash and they, you know, and they're quite efficient. But if you're producing stuff, you know, below the price at which you can make a profit, it just sends people out of business. I assume that's the same with Bitcoin miners, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. I mean, you'll have seen with small gold mining stocks in the UK stock market and others that they can be extremely sensitive to the gold price, can't they? If they're near to their kind of cost of production, in particular, if the price of gold is somewhere near their cost of production, then they can be so sensitive. Just a tiny rise in the price of gold can send the share price flying, and vice versa. Argo Blockchain, the company that you're investing in, is kind of similar in that way, in the sense that you identified before we went on air, you identified for me that their cost of production is somewhere around $2,000. Well, need to make a profit.
Well, I haven't seen that stated by them. Investing community on Twitter suggested that to me.
Right.
I said, right, well, I haven't found that figure anywhere. They are doing very well. They're accumulating, bitcoins and crypto assets very well, increasing their level of production. They've now got about 7,000 machines. They're adding, because they've just got a deal with when you run that amount of machines, the amount of electricity you go through is phenomenal. So they've just done a deal, clean energy, to produce a very low cost energy. So they can now say take that up to another 12,000 machines to add, and they're mining these things. So I don't know. I've not seen them state what their average cost of mining a Bitcoin is. I don't know if it's 2,000 or not, but they want to be lowest 2, cost.
2,000 is pretty much the lowest I've ever heard.
Yeah,
if it truly is as low as that, then they're doing fantastically. I mean, they're based in Canada, aren't they? And I guess, you know, typically these companies tend to find a way to get the lowest kind of electricity cost possible, because that's usually their biggest input cost. So they will have found a place, I guess, in Canada that's very, very cold and doesn't need a lot of electricity to cool the machines. And perhaps they've done a deal. A lot of them now do deals with renewable energy companies, for example, is becoming more and more popular, where they get sort of, you know, wind energy and that kind of thing at a very, very low cost. I assume if it's produced, you know, if they locate themselves right near to a wind farm, and then maybe it makes it more cost effective for the wind farm to provide energy cheaply to them because they're nearby, that kind of thing.
Okay, cool. And this thing about, have this company taken on board the fact that Bitcoin becomes harder to mine. It's a hardwired into the design of Bitcoin and most cryptocurrencies, like you say, that the longer they want a finite amount of Bitcoin. So did you say to beat inflation? Is that right? Which is quite clever, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea of Bitcoin is that the whole reason it was invented really was to try and be a sort of more inflation-proof currency, because the Satoshi Nakamoto, the mysterious guy who invented Bitcoin, who we still don't know who he is. There was yet another fake reveal of Satoshi last week. Somebody claimed to have evidence that they were him. Turns out it was nonsense yet again. So we still don't know who this guy was. But the idea when he invented Bitcoin about a decade ago was that, unlike traditional fiat currencies, you wouldn't have a central bank that could just print as much of it as they wanted and, you know, devalue all of our savings, which is what so many people are angry about, especially gold investors. So it's kind of like gold in that way, in that it's something that gets produced in smaller and, well, not gold is not produced necessarily in smaller and smaller quantities, but Bitcoin is. It actually has a decreasing amount of Bitcoins that are churned out year after year, and that's a way of kind of keeping a lid on any potential inflation. That's the idea of it.
That's, do you know, and that's the key. You know, like I said, this book I read, do you know, a while back, it was quite heavy going. It wasn't actually a start. It was quite too easy going at the start, and then got into it, and then it was okay. I really found bits of it interesting, but then my attention span is not really good. I did about three quarters of the book, but it was about how to own the world. And basically, it was about how inflation is so underestimated by governments, and they do it on purpose, and everything is not accounted for. And inflation, real inflation, probably runs at twice the rate it is at the moment. And so your cash buying power is always going down. So what you need to do is attain inflation beating assets all the time, or you know, in stock markets, attain that. Because otherwise, you know, you can buy less now than you will in 10 years' time with the same amount of money. And like I said, gold and Bitcoin, hopefully, are those kind of assets that are, you know, anti-inflationary. They go against inflation, so they don't get the suffer the effects of inflation. And that's why people go towards them, you know, in recessions and all this stuff as well, because they hold their value, you know. So people are still arguing about where the Bitcoin is, but I believe it is. It's risen with gold recently. Gold is now coming back. Bitcoin's coming back as well. So, you know, we had that worry last week about, you know, the yield curve and Donald Trump ramping up sort of trade wars at the start of the week before last. And now it's come back down. He said, no, we're talking deals. People realise the yield curve doesn't come into effect if it's a potential recession, doesn't happen until 18 months' time. So people have calmed down, stock markets have rallied, and gold's come back, Bitcoin's come back. So it does seem to be acting like, you know, a safe haven asset, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big investor in gold now. Well, I say big investor. Not compared to some.
Are you buying more than the Chinese government, yeah?
I am behind the Chinese government. I'm the man who does it for them. No, it was like I bought into gold much earlier this year before all the kind of hype about it. So you know, I'm happy with that. I bought it a good time, and it's gone up a lot since I bought it. But it's now got to the point, even though from a charting technical perspective, everything looks hunky-dory. You know, the gold chart price has broken out just as I would have hoped it would, and, you know, is on track to go much, much higher if this were a kind of a normal trade. What makes me feel it's not a normal trade, and what worries me about it, is that everybody's talking about it. You know, it's like such a well-known thing now that the price of gold is going up. And you know how these things work. As soon as everybody's talking about something, that's the time that you've got to worry. So I'm worried.
Yeah, well, no, I believe that. I think the fact that there's... And the yield curve has been explained to so many people who wouldn't have a clue about it. And the recession is coming.
Friends of mine who know nothing about economics are asking me about the yield curve.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, do you know what? A recession is not going to happen. I mean, no recession is that signposted. You know, the thing about the recessions or a bear market, they almost take people by surprise because people don't want to believe it. But I mean, the fact that we are signposting it, the market is not going to do that. Okay, you know, and the fact is, people will start thinking like that. There's something it's not going to happen because everyone knows about it, and people will start investing.
Like a friend of mine asked me the other day, "Are you now going to short the stock markets?" Because I've heard all about this inverted yield curve thing, and you know, this is a friend who's nothing to do with economics. I've heard about the inverted yield curve, that there's going to be a recession, so, and the stock market's going to crash. So are you going to short the market, Glenn, like you did in 2008 when you made all that money shorting the market? And I said exactly what you've just said, basically, which is it feels, because everybody's signposting it, it feels like it just, how could it possibly happen if everybody knows about it in advance? Whereas in 2008, when I shorted the market, yeah, everybody knew there were problems in the US, but people did not expect the market to crash, which is why I was able to show off about it afterwards and write about it in the Times and everything, because I was one of the few people who had successfully shorted the market. Whereas if I were to do it this time, it would be me and everybody's granny shorting the market all at the same time. And as you say, that just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if your mate says that to you, he's really saying, the fact that you were telling me this means I'll do the opposite. Because if you know about it, it's like the old, that's like the old, was it?
The shoe shine.
Herbert Hoover, or Henry Hoover?
I wrote about it in my book, the Joseph Kennedy, John F. Kennedy's
dad. Is it? Okay, yeah. The shoe shine guy says, you know, stocks, he's really bullish on the market. He said, the fact that the shoe shine guy is buying stocks and shares means everyone is in, everyone's bought. You know, that means it can't go any higher. And let's go.
And Joe Kennedy sold all his stocks before the crash as a result.
I think that's been enhanced, that story. I don't think he actually went back to the office straight after that. And I think there was probably some other, basically, just, you know, the amount of money he had in stocks. Did he honestly base his selling side, you know, theory just on that shoeshine guy's one phrase or question. I think there's probably other indicators in the market he paid attention to, but that doesn't make a good story. The shoeshine guy makes a good story.
Everyone likes a good apocryphal story.
Stories sell. Okay, so talk about stories. Your story, your book, and the guy Eric Finman, you mentioned this. Who's Eric Finman?
Oh, yeah, this guy, yeah, the Eric Finman is or claims to be the youngest Bitcoin millionaire. He got in touch with me a week or so ago because he'd heard about my book, and he just wrote and said, actually, I feel like an idiot because he wrote me a private message going, oh, heard about all about your book. This sounds very interesting. And I just kind of wrote back going, yeah, you should buy it. It's really good. And, but the guy is kind of a bit of a celebrity, and it's occurred to me since. I should have offered to send him a free copy, shouldn't I? Isn't that what proper people who know about promotion and marketing actually do?
Yeah. Well, just look at his Twitter now. He's got 45,000 followers, but he's also we launched a satellite, Time's Most Influential Teen, he's called.
I failed to offer a free book to the Times' Most Influential Teen.
You should get back to him now and say, sorry, fella, do you know what? I should have recognised you. I'm not giving you any favours or treating you any differently because you've done very well, but, here's a big but, if you ever want to chat, hook up, do a podcast, have a copy of my book, anything. Yeah,
come and stay in my house, you know, yeah.
Surprised you only got 45,000 followers, though.
I know, that surprised me as well, because he is kind of lauded as the youngest Bitcoin millionaire, but yeah, maybe he hasn't been on Twitter that long. But anyway, the point is, because he's so young, apart from anything else, but he bought Bitcoin when he was 12 years old, loads of it.
That's illegal, surely.
Back then, would it have been illegal? Because it wasn't a proper thing, you see. That's the thing. When in its early days, it just wasn't considered any kind of a legal, you know, thing to buy. He might as well have been buying Tic Tacs over the internet. You know, it's something you could do at any age back then, I guess.
Yeah. But he's now started a business. I was going to say, but, you know, the fact that he made a million in Bitcoin says something, but...
He made millions because he bought so much of it when he was young. So he now flies about in private jets, as far as I can see, and is very pleased with himself. But anyway, he's been in the news because he has made a big investment in a company called Metal, which is basically a kind of Bitcoin pretender, and he's very excited about it. But at the same time, lots of people are saying, Bart, the price of this particular cryptocurrency has plummeted by more than 90% in recent times. So, you know, why are you so confident in it? I mean, it's one of those things, really, where the technology is fantastic. And there are so many of these things in the world of cryptocurrency, things where the technology is absolutely fantastic, and you just think, my God, this thing is so clever, it's going to conquer the world, and yet the price is still in the toilet, and pretty much the price of everything apart from Bitcoin itself is still in the toilet. In fact, I read a report that's just come out that argues that the real dominance of Bitcoin over other cryptocurrencies may be as much as 90%. In other words, of the entire cryptocurrency market, Bitcoin may really dominate about 90% of the true value of the market currently, using sort of clever methods that they've made to just sort of work out the true value. And I think that could well be true. If anything, since the cryptocurrency crash, Bitcoin's dominance has just grown and grown and grown. But that is kind of what you would expect in between big booms, because people go to relative safety. And believe it or not, Bitcoin, in the cryptocurrency world, Bitcoin is considered a safer investment. It's all relative, I guess.
Yeah, it's even bigger than that first mover advantage thing, you know? I mean, because it's like anything. I mean, if you look at the world right now, you know, there's only room for one big player sort of thing in the digital world. I mean, if you look at video, you could argue Vimeo's up there, but let's be honest, YouTube, right? If you look at social media, I mean, it's really Facebook, and you've got the other ones, but Facebook dwarf everything else, you know? So, and even going down to sort of businesses in the UK, you know, you get the right move. Okay, there's other players in the market, but when you think about, you know, advertising online, looking for houses online, you look at right move first. So it's all these kind of things, isn't it? And in cars, like Auto Trader. So once you get that first mover advantage, of course, and if you get out there first, then you're going to always have that dominance, pretty much, unless you really mess up, like Gerald Ratner with his gold. Do you remember Gerald Ratner? Yeah, but we sell crap. That's not a good thing to say, Gerald, when you're selling gold. You say it's crap. That's one of the worst marketing messages ever. And he's still paying the price, isn't he? He's still, everyone says, oh, Gerald Ratner, crap. Right,
it's true. It's like it's literally just marked him. He might as well have had it tattooed on his forehead. Yeah. Just followed him around for 30 years.
In fact, that should be the hallmark on the back of all their jewellery. You know, it's CRAP. It just says, you look, you know, you look with your little, what's those little glass eye things that you look at? Oh, yeah, that's Gerald Ratner's gold as crap in the back there. Marvellous, Glenn. Thanks for that, fella. Listen, and we'll catch up next week. Who knows where the Bitcoin price will be? Maybe it'll be above 11,000. Maybe it'll be below 9,000.
Maybe, because as you say, it's coiling. It's reaching the end of that coin of coiling up now. There isn't much further for it to go within that trading range. So, yeah, next week we could see fireworks.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, IDE Group Holdings. Don't know what's happened there, but they're down 5%. At four, Argo Mining, up 6.29%. At three, it's ADM Energy. It's not mobile. It used to be MXO, of course. At two, big rise of the day, AD4, up 79% a day. And number one, most followed companies, Europa Metals, up, or it's down actually, but it's been rising crazily, like really has had the momentum behind it the last few days. It's down 8% a day, but literally it's done about, it must have done close to, what, 60, 70% in the last few days? That's EUZ. Okay, top five most liked RNSs. Wasn't a lot out there actually today. So we have, at five, it's Union Jack Oil, West Newton A2 update. At four, Predator Oil and Gas, Progress Update Trinidad. At three, Hammerbird Resources, unaudited interim results. At two, Jersey Oil and Gas, 31st Supplementary Offshore Licensing Round. And number one was a Bidstack Group, change of broker. They've sort of upgraded, really. They've gone to, from a UK-based small-cap broker to an international broker, you know, that basically looks after big companies as well. So, yeah, it's a move upwards. And I know people sort of, you know, worry sometimes when a company changes broker because, oh, placement's coming, because brokers will, you know, approach a company if they can raise money for them. But in this case, I don't think that worry is warranted. I genuinely think it's a move upwards for Bidstack. And like I said, most small-cap companies, you know, they have a broker they can get, that's all. Or they can stick with it, and that's it. But I mean, and then they get a new one if they can raise some money. But with Bidstack, with a lot of options going on there, I just genuinely think they are moving up a couple of leagues, you know? So it's good news for Bidstack. It's, I think, continued growth and expansion awaits them. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.